This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. It's a new month, and joining me to give a rundown of what we can expect on the various streaming services is Editor-in-Chief of Extremist, Rob Toledo. Thanks for joining me, Rob.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We didn't get a chance to talk about it, and I really wanted to, is Bright. What did you think of it?
Bright, to me, was an interesting story for Netflix. I think, you know, this is their second or third attempt at, you know, a big blockbuster movie. They brought in Will Smith. You know, I heard the rumor was the budget on this thing was like $70 million plus. You know, they had, you know, big expectations for this, you know, big sci-fi, you know, crime, you know, buddy cop movie, if you can, you know, mesh all those genres together. The thing that I find the funniest, though, is that, you know, it absolutely just got panned by the critics. You know, I think it's got like a 27% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. You know, and you know, kind of with that in mind, you would think the movie would just have been a disaster. But then, you know, Netflix comes out and says, no, this thing's been a huge success. And, you know, what they mean by that is they have a ton of people watching the movie. You know, they obviously know very specifically based on the data of, you know, who's streaming what, that, you know, in their mind, it's been a big success. And so it's just been interesting to kind of follow along with, you know, this as another example of Netflix maybe knowing what the general population might like a little bit more than the critics. You know, I think we saw this too with, you know, the Adam Sandler movies as well. You know, they absolutely got destroyed by critics. I think one of them has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. And, you know, but Netflix, I don't think they care. You know, it's, critical darlings are great, but what they're really looking for is just lots of people tuning in and streaming whatever movie they add to the catalog. And, you know, I'll give my opinion on the movie. I wasn't crazy about it. I thought it was okay. It was fun. You know, but it, you know, I'm once again just one writer on the internet who talks about this stuff, and, you know, Netflix knows better than I do, I guess, about who likes what. And so, you know, for those who aren't familiar, you know, it's a pretty fun movie with, you know, kind of the way I like to joke about it is like if World of Warcraft was maybe set in the present day, you know, kind of like a buddy cop between an orc and a human. And, you know, it's just kind of this like awkward tension between all these different races. And, you know, Will Smith, of course, is doing Will Smith things. And, you know, so it's fun and kind of mindless. But, you know, I think Netflix views it as a big success. The critics view it as a huge failure. And, you know, with that, I don't know who's right. I suppose Netflix, because they're the ones that are collecting the checks.
I was really anticipating to watch this movie, and I watched it, and I watched it quite a few times. And one of my biggest thing is I love fantasy, anything like with lots of lore and stuff. I really enjoy that. And I think that was the problem with this movie, was that there was so much backstory to it with the lore that there's no way you could have just smooshed that into a movie. I think this would have done better as like a 10 or 13 episode series.
Yeah, you know, and I've heard that. I've heard that, you know, people would have maybe preferred kind of some more world building and not cramming so much of, the movie's barely 2 hours or whatever. And, you know, you don't have time to build up a lot of what I think could be some important details, you know, kind of around, you know, the whole backstory about like all the, you know, they crammed a lot of like, okay, well, why are these people at this, you know, why are all these different, you know, fantasy elements kind of at, you know, at odds with each other, and, you know, more time spent building that up. You know, I heard it compared to kind of like a fantasy version of Training Day, that movie with Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
I thought that was a pretty, a pretty accurate description of the movie.
Now, they did say, Netflix has said that they're going to release Bright 2. Do you think Bright 2 will have more backstory, or it's just going to be another type of movie like this?
Yeah, I don't know. Basically, all of the information I've been able to gather so far has been, yes, there will be a sequel, and I could see this maybe being serialized a little bit down the road. So, you know, maybe if the feedback is kind of like, hey, you know, Netflix does plenty of research, if they get a lot of feedback around that, you know, and commentary that we want more backstory, we want more development of, you know, these characters or these storylines, I think, you know, you're probably in, probably could certainly head that direction. You know, I think if anything, Netflix will recognize, you know, if the viewership stays strong, you know, they'll keep pumping these things out as long as they keep being profitable and successful for their service.
Yeah, and Netflix is always experimenting. And one of the shows I wanted to talk about was Dark. Now, this is a German-based show, or I'm kind of confused where it comes from.
It's in German. It was, you know, it's German's first, or excuse me, it's Netflix's first German original series. So, you know, for those who are averse to subtitles, you know, better find a different show. But, you know, I'm only about halfway through it right now. And then the reason I kind of pass on it at first, you know, it came out in December, is it just didn't have a lot of it. It didn't get a lot of that immediate attention that I think some, you know, maybe more of the higher expectation shows get. But it's really created, it's really grown a big audience over the past like 3 or 4 weeks. You know, you turn to social media and you kind of watch the trends, and a lot of people are talking about this show right now. You know, the comparison that I keep hearing, or there's two comparisons, it's kind of like a blend of Stranger Things and Twin Peaks, and I think that's pretty accurate from what I've seen so far. Stranger Things and like the, you know, kind of like the eerie small town, you know, with all these sci-fi happenings going on. The time, you know, there's like a time travel element to the show. And then I think from the Twin Peaks perspective, there's a little bit of a, well, what the heck is actually even going on, you know, kind of mentality that I think the Twin Peaks got famous for. And so, you know, it takes place in the small German town. There's, you know, there's several, it takes place across 3 different decades, or maybe it's 4 decades. And kind of, it tells the story of, you know, these family mysteries. I think there's 4 main families in the show, and it kind of goes into their backstories. And once again, I haven't finished the series yet, so I don't know if there's a bunch of pay dirt at the end, but I they have renewed the show for a second season, so I imagine they're going to keep this one going too. But I think this one was, you know, this is a great example of Netflix probably not spending a huge budget on a show, and then just kind of almost hitting the lottery with it. You know, it's kind of opposite of Bright. You know, it has a 87% on Rotten Tomatoes and a, you know, real high audience rating as well. So it's doing quite well for the service, and I think they've been pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I saw it was trending too, so I binged it and I finished it. And I'm a sucker for time travel kind of things, and this one's really complex. And I'm not going to lie, I had to write some of it down just to keep up. It's wild.
And I think that's what people love about it. You know, it's I would say it's got a little bit more to it than Stranger Things, and that's not to take anything away from Stranger Things. I think it's a lot of fun, but, you know, it is more, and once again, this might just be because I don't speak German, so I spend the whole episodes reading and not, you know, casually looking at my phone like I might during other shows, but it felt, you know, it feels intellectually challenging. I think people like that.
Yeah, I can see that, but I could absolutely see that it's kind of challenging because you have to keep up with the I think it's 4 families, and it's over the span of like 3 generations, and it's like a gate opens every 33 years. It's crazy. And that's why I had to write it down, and I had to go back too. But one of the things that I didn't like about Dark was the dubbed version is really bad. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of commentary on that on social media as well. So I could certainly see that's a common complaint.
But, you know, I can't really say it's bad because I'm used to the dubbed versions of, like, anime. So they try very hard to match up the words to the mouth, and it's a little bit easier with animation. So I could, like, hey, you know, kudos to you for trying to dub over human lips, because they really tried, but it was a horrible mess, and it was kind of comical at some point, so I ended up having to put the subtitles back.
No, that's how I ended up watching it,
Speaking of another future show was on, and I don't know when this came out, but I have to talk about it, Future Man on Hulu. That one was crazy. Did you watch it or no?
I did, yeah, I did. I, you know, Hulu puts out a pretty limited amount of original content, so anytime they do, it catches my attention. And I watched it. I enjoyed it because I had such low expectations. You know, I watched the trailer and I was like, "This looks so dumb," and then it was. But it was like it was so self-aware of its own stupidity that I was like, "I love that," you know.
Absolutely, you're right about that. I thought this was more like satire than it was trying to be serious, and it worked because everything that happened in the show is something as a audience or a viewer of like future kind of time travel shows, you ask yourself like, hey, why don't you do this, why don't you do that, and he does it and it blows up in his face.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's exactly right. Is like it knows what it is, and I always respect a show that, you know, treats its audience with that respect. You know, it's like, listen, we're going to make a joke of this, and you can enjoy that or you can be super critical. And like, you know, it's not doing well critically. Like, people are like, the show's really stupid. I'm like, yeah, but it knows that it's stupid, and that's the difference, you know.
And you know what? It's one of those shows you don't have to take too serious. It's just the right amount of like fart jokes that you need.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
and for me, I like that because there's so many shows out there right now that are so into themselves and so dramatic and very serious, even when it should be fun. And that's what I like about Future Man. It doesn't have to be serious if you don't want to take it seriously. Is it good enough to get a season two or no? The Hulu was like, no, we're not doing it.
Good question. I don't know what the viewership numbers are like. Hulu, you know, just like all the other streaming services, they're super cagey about this stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if it got picked up. I can't imagine the production on it was super expensive. You know, there was some CGI and special effects, but like, you know, there wasn't any huge name actor in it. And, you know, I think, you know, none of those people are like, you know, turning away tons of work right now after Future Man's wild, you know, success or anything. So I could see it getting picked up. I'm not sure. It, you know, it seems prime for, you know, maybe a serialized run, but, you know, we'll see.
Another thing on Hulu that I tried to watch, and it was a little bit hard for me. It was Freakish. Did you have a problem watching that? It was, for me, it was like I couldn't stand the characters, but maybe that was just me.
You know, I have not watched that yet, but I've heard that complaint from a lot of people. I wouldn't doubt that you're alone on that. Now, you know, I'm trying to figure out what Hulu is doing with their original content. Right now. You know, it's like it's all over the map. I wouldn't say they're particularly keen on marketing it really well. You know, like when Netflix has a big hit show, you hear about it. And I think with Hulu, it's kind of like, I feel like they're just putting a lot of stuff out there right now. And not even a lot, just kind of they're putting some stuff out there and kind of seeing if anything sticks. But it's like, there's just this, you know, outside of Handmaid's Tale, which has done really well for them, you know, it feels like original content's kind of been playing second fiddle for them. You know, it's like they're so focused on, you know, kind of next day television that you could otherwise watch, you know, through normal cable or, you know, even they've been pushing their live stream service pretty heavily recently as well. So, you know, with Freakish, you know, with Future Man, it's just all these different shows. It's, you know, they're just not quite as focused, I think, as maybe some of the more mature streaming services.
Well, yeah, you know, when I was watching Freakish, I thought, like, this is something that should be on the CW. It's kind of for teenagers. It's more emotional than your normal type of zombie apocalypse thing. Because
right.
Where I would have just been like, okay, kill out all the zombies. They're like, no, we have to discuss this. It's a democracy. It's like not
right.
During the apocalypse, people. So,
right.
But it was very teenagey. And then there's Future Man, which is more like an FX thing. And then you have, mm-hmm. you know, Handmaid's Tale. That's more of like a Showtime thing. So I think they're trying to to get everybody in their little
right.
thing. But I don't know if it's working or not. And one of the ones I wanted to know if you thought it was working was Marvel's Runaway. What did you think of that?
Yeah, so you said that you thought, you know, it kind of felt like that was a CW show. And I kind of, Freakish, I kind of thought the same thing about Marvel's Runaways a little bit, you know, because, you know, CW has that kind of that audience pretty nailed. And you know, I would say that this one just isn't for me. You know, that Runaways wasn't for me, you know, and I don't think Hulu's afraid to say that. You know, this is kind of more of a, you know, young adult Marvel version of, you know, what we've seen versus like the Netflix original Marvel and stuff. So it was, you know, it was okay. I don't think it was designed to entertain somebody with my taste. So how about you? What do you think of it?
You're right on the money with that, because it was a whole... The last few episodes really was cringeworthy for me, because it turned into a mom and dad are the enemies. And I'm like, how pre-progressant is this? You know, like, like mom and dad are not like, the enemies. The world is not black and white. You know, there are some gray areas, people.
Right. Now, there was somebody mocking like the current kind of young adult, you know, fantasy sci-fi, not more specifically novels and things like that. Like, where are the parents in all of this?
Now, with Marvel's Runaways, was this, because I binged it, but I was looking at it, did it come out like every week?
Yeah, so Hulu has a different, that's exactly right. Hulu has a very different release cycle. They don't typically will release their originals all at once. They have for a few, but typically they will do like a standard television release cycle, which I don't know if that's good or bad. But, you know, whereas Netflix or Amazon, it's just like, here's the whole season of a show. Go do whatever you want with it. Now, for people who lack self-control like me, typically if I like a show, I'm going to watch all of it in the long weekend. Where Hulu, I think, is taking a little bit different of a stance, and I'd call it more of an experiment to see if it can, you know, maybe grow their audience of originals at a different, you know, just different than Netflix might, by releasing once a week or two episodes a week. And, you know, I haven't heard anything negative from Hulu's, you know, reps talk about this stuff, but... You know, for me personally, it's just like, I just kind of wish they'd give me the whole thing, and then I'll decide how I want to watch it. Once again, like I said, if I love it, I'll probably just end up binging it. But, you know, that's kind of an experiment that they're running with, and I guess more power to them.
Yeah, I thought that was a little weird. When I first started getting Hulu, I ended up getting watching Freakish, and that was pulling teeth there. And then I jumped to Future Man. And that's when I noticed, like, Marvel's Runaways. Like, hey, is this every week? Like, that wasn't as many episodes as the last time I checked. That is a bit weird. I mean, for a streaming service, you expect everything to kind of be there to be consumed immediately. So I was a little shocked about that. Versus, like, on Netflix, they have the Chelsea Handler show. That's, I think, once a week, right?
Yeah, that's right. That one, and then they're trying a bunch of that stuff now. Like, they're doing, they have a show coming out this month. Like, do you remember Joel McHale from Community? He had a show called The Soup a couple years ago.
Yes, I remember that.
They're bringing that back under a different name called The Joel McHale Show with Joel McHale, haha. You know, and it's basically like a comedy version of like a weekly news recap, kind of with pop culture as the focus. And they also have, Dave Letterman's back on Netflix as an original content, you know, and they're going to do a weekly show with him. And it's just like, well, that's interesting. That's so off brand for Netflix, or at least it has been traditionally. And, you know, now they're getting into like, you know, weekly live, or not live, but weekly. Like, wait, isn't that exactly what you weren't for the past like 7 or 8 years? But, you know, I guess, you know, as they hope to grow their content library and kind of become a big player, you know, all of these different services have to try stuff like that to keep their audience growing.
Okay, I can see that argument. I was just, you know, in my mind, I'm like, stop trying to be a cable company and just give me my binge, right?
Well, that's kind of the joke, right, is that we're all probably heading right back towards, you know, giant cable companies once all these streaming services are all available underneath, like, one company or something, Disney just buying Fox, and now they're going to create this huge streaming service that's going to probably be the biggest, you know, content library in the world. You know, like, and then there was a rumor this last month that, like, Apple was going to buy Netflix, and it's like, oh, man, we are really going to end up with, like, one or two options at the end of this, aren't we?
But, you know, doesn't Disney own majority of Hulu? Why would they make their own streaming service? Why not just absorb Hulu and be Disney Hulu?
So this is a very interesting question, and one that I've been tracking real closely. So up until the Fox acquisition, you know, Disney owned, you know, 30% of Hulu, Fox owned 30%, Comcast, who owns NBC, owned 30%, and then there was just 10% of, like, other investors. Now, Disney owns 60% of Hulu with the Fox acquisition, and I have a really hard time imagining that, like, NBC is going to want to play nicely with that, right? Like, you know, Disney is going to want to throw their muscle around now owning the majority stake of the company. So there's a lot of talk that, oh, maybe they're just planning on kind of making Hulu their streaming service, but from what I keep hearing is that, no, they have full intention of launching a new streaming service. And I don't know what that means or if that's going to change in the long term, but as it stands right now, like, they're planning on launching a streaming service. So maybe they want the Disney name on it, you know? Maybe they want it to be, like, Disney's streaming service, not, you know, Hulu, which started as just, like, a random tech startup, you know? So I guess I could see that, but, like, man, Hulu's already got, I think the last I heard, they've got between, like, 12 and 15 million subscribers. So it's like, you're off to a pretty good start there, you know?
Yeah.
Why not just expand on that? And you know, if they want to kick NBC out of the deal, like, they can now, or at least I would think they could make, you know, moves to make that happen. So, yeah, it's only going to get more interesting with that deal because, you know, like I was saying, you know, Disney paid, what, like $50 billion for basically most of Fox's library. And, you know, that's a lot of content. Like, if they come out with their own service, like, that is going to be a ton of content. And, you know, as I think you and I had talked about before, like, you know, they're planning on making this cheaper than Netflix. So, so watch out, Netflix.
Yeah. You know, either way, I'm going to be excited because, you know, for me, I'm always thinking I'm the consumer. I'm winning here because they want my money more than anything.
Right, yeah, and you know, I think if Disney can come out with a really good service for $8-9 a month, like, of course I'm going to pay that, you know. I'm a sucker for that stuff.
Yeah, all the nostalgia there, right?
Yeah, totally.
Speaking of nostalgia, Netflix came out with a show that I absolutely fell in love with, The Toys That Made Us. Did you watch it?
I did, yeah. That was really fun, wasn't it? I mean, it was like designed to basically appeal to me, like, oh, we're going to talk about where G.I. Joe came from. It's like, yeah. Of course I'm going to love that, you know? A lot of fun.
I like that they actually talked about the controversy within the toys. And for me, just being a collector, I didn't know about all this drama, and I loved it.
Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah, no kidding. Thinking back as like a little kid having no context around like these toys themselves and now getting the history of them, it's so fascinating.
Yeah, and I like the one about He-Man and She-Ra where the dude blamed She-Ra for the failure and of He-Man and the bat. I was like, what? Like, no way.
Right, I know, how funny is that?
Now, there's supposed to be a part two to that, right?
I think so, yeah. And once again, it'll all be dictated by how well the show performed. But my understanding is that there was plans for that one to have a few more seasons. So certainly, I think they're just kind of lining up which toys they'll feature next.
Yeah, I'm hoping they do My Little Ponies, maybe Care Bears.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Rainbow Bright, we got everything coming out, right?
Exactly.
Now, for this upcoming month, what can we expect to be on Netflix and Hulu?
Oh, sure, yeah. I think the one that we're all, you know, holding our breath on is Netflix original Altered Carbon, which is based on that Richard Morgan novel. Big, huge budget sci-fi show. It releases at the, I think, middle of February. You know, basically the whole concept of like, you know, can your consciousness be moved from one body to the next, and this big action sci-fi. It's, you know, it's Netflix's, I'd say, next big bet. You know, the internet, you know, fandom of the novel is just super excited for the show, and the trailers have looked fantastic, so I'm really excited for that. The other one that's doing really well right now, I think, and one of my co-founder on Extremist is Jacob. He says the Star Trek Discovery on CBS is it's in the second half of its first season right now, and just started back up in January, and you know, everyone's loving that. And then on Amazon, it comes out later this month. They released the Tick season 1A, you know, last year, and season 1B, whatever that means, comes out this month as well. So I'm looking forward to the second half of that show because it's been a lot of fun too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too, man. That the Tick was just the right amount of silly, and I like silly shows.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And for those listening, where can they find you at?
Yeah, they can find me at extremist.com, and hopefully we'll have fun and exciting news on your favorite streaming services.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's masonverapaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.